Technorama episode 530. There's always that one screw.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Oh my gosh, someone stole the media corner. Where does it go?
Over there, in the media corner.
What?
How utterly meta.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
There are some things you plan for and some things you make up on the fly.
And that sums up our 13-year run here at Technorama.
We are coming up on 13 years. Oh, my gosh. May 1st is our 13-year anniversary.
God, and I thought we've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, we're old, man. We're old podcast, man.
I need my pod walker.
No, I don't think that's a thing yet.
No.
Get off my podcast, you pod kids.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. Thank you for joining us. If you're just joining us for the first time, well, I am Chuck Tomasi, and if you are joining us, coming back to us from another world, another dimension, I am still Chuck Tomasi, and joining me with, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hola, I'm doing great.
Awesome. We have a little bit of audio video latency for those of you that are watching live on the live stream because Craig has to get his signal all the way from the moon and back.
Yes. Satellite. Via satellite. There you go.
Also joining us, we have a celebrity with us.
I am? Okay, I'll take your word for it.
He's been schmoozing all weekend.
I've been schmoozing this is Ben Ragginson of the Two Gay Geeks. The other gay geek is at home. He has to travel he's traveling on business. So it's just me, and yes, I just came in from the Phoenix Film Festival.
And boy, are my arms tired.
Boy, are my knees tired.
Good to Groveling. Have you.
Oh, happy to be
I,
here.
I want to hear about your film festival in just a little bit.
Yeah, I do too.
Happy to share. Maybe we can get that in the media corner.
Hey, that's a thought.
That would be a good place, unless you have trouble remembering when. Not working.
Remember
not
when?
Not working.
No, it's not working.
All right, we have, we don't have any feedback.
And we're already off the rails.
Yeah, no, didn't happen this week. We didn't hear from any of you via email or phone or postcard or carrier pigeon signal.
For just a moment there, I was like, well, we have feedback? Oh, no. So no, we didn't.
Quick, Craig, go check the voicemail box.
I don't think, no, I would have gotten an email. I didn't get
it. Okay, good.
Oh, pull that one out.
Then grab your D20s, kids. It's time to do the history thing.
Oh, dear.
I'm going to roll one towards Ben on the far side of the studio. Here we go.
Ready? Here I go.
Got it. All right, let's see if I can do better than the last few times.
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me?
20!
I got a really? 5.
I got an 8.
Oh, bugger. Yes, that means I'm first.
Can I roll again? Oh, I got a 20 on that one. Can
oh,
I use that
liar.
One?
Liar. How dare you roll again? I'm going to roll a second time.
I'll keep adjusting volumes because Craig was kind of blowing us out on this end. Huh? You're good. So who's first?
I guess it's me since I got a 5.
I'll take the 8 I rolled thought we go earlier.
No, 20 rolls high.
So we're going descending order.
That's how it goes when you're...
Okay, so I'm last.
Me, Craig, Chuck. No, me, what? Craig, Ben.
What?
You picked the
split personality.
You lose a turn.
Do we need to start calling in the psychiatrists, Craig?
Yeah.
We need to start calling the I'm not Craig, but
he's
Chuck.
He's referring to himself in the first and third person.
Yeah.
Like Elmo or Dick Bando.
Yeah.
Start calling in the men in the little white coats.
Wasn't there a celebrity that did that too? Was it Tiny Tim? No, somebody. There was a celebrity that used to refer to themselves in the third person.
There's a number of people who refer to themselves in the third person. Can't remember any of them right now. It's just not that important.
Let's do the history thing.
I never talk about Craig like that.
We do. Where is it? Here it is. On this day in history for April 18th, 2018, this is the 108th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 257 days remaining in 2018. It was on this date in 1506 that the cornerstone of the current St. Peter's Basilica is laid. Makes you wonder where the previous one was.
It was also on this date in 1857 that the Spirit Book by Alan Kardec was published, marking the birth of spiritualism.
Spiritualism.
Spotulism.
A spittoon. Yeah. An earthquake and fire destroyed much of San Francisco, California on this date in 1906.
112 years ago today. It was also on this date in 1912 that the Cunard liner RMS Carpathia brings home 705 survivors of the RMS Titanic to New York City.
On April 18th, 1923, Yankee Stadium, the house that Ruth built, opens.
That same date in 1930, the British Broadcasting Corporation announced that there is no news in their evening report.
That was a short broadcast. Someone just wanted a day off. Yes. Come on, let's admit it.
Yeah, kind of like us in the media corner this morning, or this afternoon, this earlier in the show, rather.
It was on this date in 1949 that the keel for the aircraft carrier USS United States is laid down at Newport News Dry Dock and Shipbuilding. However, construction is canceled 5 days later, resulting in the revolt of the admirals. Captain, the admirals are revolting.
Also on April 18th, 1980, the Republic of Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, comes into being with Canaan Banana as the country's first president. The Zimbabwean dollar replaces the Rhodesian dollar as the official currency.
I just love that name. Canaan Banana.
Yeah.
Yeah, Canaan Banana.
The happy birthday goes out on this date to English conductor Leopold Stokowski, born on this date in 1882.
Leopold. Yeah, there's a Bugs Bunny throwback for you.
Oh, yeah.
Ukrainian Jewish American physicist and academic Maurice Goldhaber was born 107 years ago today.
Clifton Hillegrass, the American publisher, founded Cliff Notes, was born 100 years ago today.
I found it interesting that it's actually Cliff's Notes.
Right.
It's like the opposite of daylight saving time.
Exactly.
There's an S in there, Cliff's Notes.
Yes.
Like he wrote them or something, you know.
Precisely. He owned them. Yeah. Vladimir Hut, Estonian I got the last name right and I couldn't say his title. Nice. Estonian physicist and philosopher was born on that same date in 1936.
A Pisicist.
A Pisicist, yeah. They're into fish.
English actress Hayley Mills and Hayley Mills in The Parent Trap were born on this day in 1946.
And American actor and producer James Woods is 71 today.
Oh, is my hair out?
Right. Also born on the same date in 1953, Canadian-American actor, comedian, singer, and screenwriter Rick Moranis.
He shrunk the kids or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Also turning 56 today is American comedian and ventriloquist Jeff Dunham.
Dunham. American actor, producer, screenwriter, and talk show host Conan O'Brien is 55 today.
Also born on the day in 1971, Scottish actor David Tennant.
Get in my belly.
I love his Scottish accent. I wish you would hear more of it.
Oh, no kidding.
It's stunning when you first hear it. It's like, whoa.
It's a wow.
Yeah.
I guess that didn't suit the Doctor Who thing at the time.
No, they weren't ready for it until Peter Capaldi came along.
Also turning 42 today is American actress, director, and producer Melissa Joan Hart. I think she was Clarissa Tells All back in the 90s.
Could have been.
Yeah. On Nickelodeon.
Right.
And Taiwanese. She's 42!
I know. Kind of amazing. Taiwanese computer scientist and academic Audrey Tang is 37 today.
It's a Tang or Tong?
I think it's Tang, actually.
Because I know in Lisa said in Thailand, it's Chang, C-H-A-N, which is elephant. There's
we're
no,
not in Thailand.
Well, Taiwan. Anyway.
Anyway.
I said we're not.
No.
Whose turn is it?
German chess grandmaster Matthias Bluebaum, born on this date in 1997.
He's 21. and he's a chess master.
Yeah, I feel very inadequate suddenly.
Listener birthdays today are on the 18th, Scafey, a.k.a. Anthony. Amanda, Susie the Geek's daughter, is now, what, about 25? She had a picture with her mom on Facebook the other day. She's on the 19th. The 21st is Kim and Craig's anniversary. Craig.
Yes, it Craig. Is.
Happy anniversary.
Get a present.
Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Yeah.
All right. The music is almost out. And the 23rd is runtime. I don't want any runtime errors. Happy birthday to all of you. If it is your birthday and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best. You can get on the calendar by going to chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name down there. We will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, and all the best to the rest of you. Yeah. Here we go. Yes!
Little Monty Python there.
Yeah. When we were choosing that song years and years ago, that's kind of what Michael thought it sounded like.
Really?
Yes.
Is that the Liberty Bell March?
Yeah, we found something very close. I said, that's a little too close, but this one has more of a parade kind of thing to it. But he said, that. I said, I know what I'm looking for. I'm not sure how to describe it, but shoot for Monty Python.
Yeah.
And we came up with that. We have news.
News.
Is this good news or is this bad news? What do you call first one, Craig? How about confused. Impending
news, everyone?
Confusing news, everyone. Confusing news.
Good startling news, everyone.
Take it away, Mr. Stepp.
Okay. So, with all the confusion around Stan Lee lately, there's a new video in which Stan Lee threatens to sue anyone reporting on claims of alleged elder abuse. Yeah.
It's like a box elder. It's a tree. Right.
Elder abuse. So through Stan Lee has been largely missing from the public eye in months since his wife's death last summer. Troubling reports have surfaced about his well-being. And now the 95-year-old is speaking out through a new video in which he threatens legal action against those reporting on his life. The Marvel mainstay came down with pneumonia in February.
Oh.
And and did you not know about that?
No.
Okay. He came down with pneumonia in February and is frequently his frequent convention appearances were understandably cut back. During this time, multiple reports emerged detailing how hundreds of thousands of dollars and literal blood were allegedly stolen from him. In a video sent to TMZ this week that's copyrighted to Kaya Morgan, Lee's handler, who is currently in control of all of his communications, Lee says that he's prepared to take legal action against anyone and all media outlets have claims that he has been taking advantage of.
I didn't steal the blood. He left it behind.
He just left it sitting there.
It was on the hammer.
Yeah. So you can see Lee speaks clearly in the video, and it doesn't take it doesn't at all answer the questions being raised in wake of reports that Morgan, Jerry Alvarez, and a former business partner of Lee and his daughter JC, and JC's lawyer Kirk Skyheck. I'm trying to pronounce his name. Skyheck. Have all been working to keep Lee isolated. Back in February of this year, Lee signed a document notarized with his former lawyer, Tom Lallis. I got all these weird names. Stating
that you could put those names on characters in a comic book, no one would know.
Yeah, or on this day in history. Stating that he believes Alvarez, Morgan, and Skinheck.
Try Shank.
That's how they got the blood.
Right.
to people with bad intentions, who'd insulate themselves from his family in order to gain control of his wealth. So I think this is all sad, and I'm not, because who knows what the hell's going on. And this is somebody that a lot of people obviously care about. So I hate to see that. I hate to think that somebody's taking advantage of him, especially his own daughter. But I don't know how that's, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that, I mean, yes, the video was sent by Stan, but it's all that communication is still kind of like copyrighted by his handler. So I, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me kind of starts to wonder if there isn't something a little phony about that. Not that I haven't, like, I haven't seen the video for myself yet.
Yeah, I get this feeling like, hey, Stan, let's make a video to make it clear to everybody. You know, and he makes the, helps make the video, or I don't know. That's the feeling I got.
I mean, I'd like to think that he's okay, but like the stories of, you know, missing pints of blood. I mean, that's just like, wow.
Yeah. Cause they were signing, or they were signing comics or something allegedly with his
DNA
in the blood or in the ink rather.
Well, but I know that he was doing some autographs the other day and someone had to tell him how to spell his name. And that's where a lot of concern started to come up.
Yes, that's right. That's not a good sign. Saw him signing shields and stuff. Yeah, in the video. Yeah, so, I mean, for God's sakes, the guy's 95. He should just let him rest.
I mean, it could be just the fact that he's 95.
Right.
And I saw Kevin Smith come out and some other people.
Yeah, he wants Stan to stay with him.
Yeah, come live with him. You know,
he can stay here, too.
Yeah,
happily.
I'm sure he could find a house and millions of fans, you know, would take care of him.
Got a nice, but, quiet, separate building, guest house for him. That's okay, Stan. You stay here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is all pretty sad. And, you figure somebody as old as he is, it's just, I kind of see those buzzards kind of circling around, just waiting for, you know, whatever to, you know, that they can chew off and
you
take
make
off.
Sure all the legal documents are in place before you get that going. You don't want another prince scandal on your hands. Like, who does the estate belong to? Oh, it's my daughter that I never met, or somehow she admits she's related to me.
Now, yeah.
I suspect he's got all his legal documents in order.
I would certainly hope so.
Alrighty. Ben. I this is where I wish Mr. Menengay would have shown up tonight.
Oh, he would have loved this story. This is perfectly for him.
Okay, since he's not here and probably not listening anyway.
No.
Why is it Michael started the monk must cast?
I mean, he should, given that's his man crush.
The musk. That sounds like you haven't taken a shower in a while.
Musk love.
Wait, musk is like a cologne type. Some scent is...
There is a cologne called Musk. Yeah. Anyway, during the March 30th webcast, what?
I said, I think Michael uses it.
He probably does. During the March 30th webcast of a Falcon 9 launch, video of the ascent was abruptly cut off at the 9-minute mark, with SpaceX officials saying it did so to fall in line with government restrictions.
This is great.
Bum, bum, bum. Weird, right? What's even weirder is that an obscure decades-old law is now suddenly being enforced. So, what gives?
It's all Yuri Gagarin's fault for mooning the cameras.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Well, we've been
it's
able
Yuri's
to,
night.
Yeah. We've been able to watch webcasts of SpaceX launches for years, admiring the rocket's POV as they roar through our planet's upper atmosphere.
Right.
Late last month, however, as the private space company was working to deliver 10 new Iridium satellites to low Earth orbit, the video transmission suddenly went black. Due to some restrictions from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA for short, SpaceX will be intentionally ending live video coverage of the second stage just prior to engine shutdown. Oh, but that's my favorite part.
I know, right?
Explained the SpaceX engineer Michael Hammersley during the webcast. We're working with NOAA to address these restrictions in order to hopefully be able to bring you live views from orbit in the future.
Why would they have this restriction in place in the first place?
Well, I'd like to know what the law is.
Yeah.
What is this decades-old law that suddenly they're now enforcing?
There might be something in this inset.
Well, let's find out.
It's kind of like a copyright law or something. Yeah.
A copyright?
Go ahead, watch.
As reporters... Okay, well, as reported in Space News, these restrictions are a reference to a 1992 ruling outlined in the National and Commercial Space Program Act, which requires all private space companies who want to broadcast images and video collected from space to get a license.
Oh, so they just haven't got their license yet.
I don't have a license, Lisa.
I'm on my temporary.
Yes, I only have my permit. For reasons that still aren't perfectly clear, NOAA decided to enforce this ruling for the March 30th Falcon 9 launch, telling SpaceX to sod off. No, I didn't say that. No, that the cameras on the rocket's second stage, which SpaceX uses for engineering purposes, qualify as a remote sensing space system, thus requiring the company to procure a provisional license. As an aside, there was no restriction on the recent supply mission for NASA, as government missions are exempt from this ruling. In light of this incident,
of course,
NOAA issued a statement that's so brief, we can share it with you in its entirety. The National Commercial Space Program Act requires a commercial remote sensing license for companies having the capacity to take an image of Earth while in orbit. Now that launch companies are putting video cameras on stage two rockets that reach an on-Earth orbit status, all such launches will be held to the requirements of the law and conditions. SpaceX applied and received a license from NOAA that included conditions on the capability to live stream from space, conditions on Earth imaging to protect national security are common to all licenses for launches with on-orbit capabilities. Right.
You does are not compute.
Working.
Non sequitur. As noted, SpaceX has been broadcasting images from space for years without the benefit of a license and without NOAA giving it a hard time. So what's changed? Bum, bum, bum.
This is Pirate Satellite Radio. Really satellite radio.
Oh, where's our bell when we need him?
You are in error.
You need a bell?
Art Bell.
There you go.
Art Bell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he would have something to say about this. It's all about the aliens.
Okay. You don't want them to see the aliens.
I wonder if it had something to do with them throwing the Tesla up in space. Actually, I'm glad that they didn't come down on SpaceX before that launch, because that was so spectacular and mind-blowing to watch. Can you imagine not being able to see that? Well, I guess you wouldn't know. You wouldn't care. You wouldn't have seen it.
You couldn't see it. You wouldn't care.
You wouldn't know what you're missing.
That's right.
It wasn't here. It didn't happen. It's all a fake. All right. Next story is we've got another scandal that has come out.
Dum, dum, dum.
It's over. Billy Mitchell on the picture that we're about to show. The King of Kong had his long contested Donkey Kong high score stripped from the Twin Galaxies leaderboards, and the organization has notified Guinness World Records of its decision. More than that, all of his records have been removed from the forums, and he's banned from TG's, not Ben's TG's.
Not our TG's, no.
Competitive leaderboard wholesale. TG ran an independent, it's really hard to say TG without saying geek.
Yeah.
Ran an independent investigation in addition to having at least two third parties perform their own, with other experts weighing in on the dispute as well. The investigation resulted in the confirming long-held suspicions. The provided evidence tape of the King of Kong score didn't come from actual arcade hardware. Same goes for his 1,050,200 point mortgage broker score. That doesn't sound like a very exciting game.
No.
I wouldn't have put a quarter in that machine.
You've got a foreclosure.
Not much of a return on that.
maybe house flippers would be a better. Anyway,
hey, actually, when I read that, I thought of the little, you know, mortgage calculator that you always type in. It's like one of your first programs you
type
in.
Can you afford this house at this interest rate? TG said there wasn't enough evidence to comfortably make a definitive judgment on a third score of 1,062,800. Previously, the claim was that Mitchell recorded these scores using emulation software because original hardware doesn't produce the board transition images that were recorded. But because proving emulation would be far more involved and take even more time, TG settled on proving that the scores weren't the result of playing an unmodified Donkey Kong PCB or printed circuit board. It doesn't pay to cheat, kids.
Never.
Doesn't pay.
I can see some. I can see somebody coming up to him and ripping his Twin Galaxies patch off his.
Well, I'm
jacket.
Sure at the time he thought there was no way they could catch him on that. Surprise.
What's the sound when you get hit by a barrel?
Hey, you know what? I've been frustrated playing video games trying to get better high scores, but I never thought about cheating to get a record.
No.
Well, the only way you could do that is, well, that's a really unusual way of cheating. I mean, I think of things like trying to find little system loopholes that by which, you know, you can get infinite lives or, you know, something fun like that.
I may have done something similar in college.
Indeed.
And now midway, confession hour.
Midway games used to have a flaw in the coin box. I think we talked about this before, Craig. And if you put a little bent wire or coat hanger in there right. Yeah.
You could trigger it.
Cling, 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 cling. Yeah. And we would go up to Ms. Pac-Man games, put 99 credits on because that was the max, and then walk away. And then just people watch as people went by. Wow! And started playing. It was sort of like, you know, putting money in the meters for people.
Well, I was going to say that's like charity, but not really. No.
There was nothing charitable.
There's no charitable about it. It's all about laughing.
It was an experiment that, you know, can I do it? Can I do it? Yep, it worked. Let's go. It's not like I tried making a career or any money off of it.
I'm calling Twin Galaxies on you right now.
What are they going to strip me of? I haven't got any titles.
Right.
But they're going to take that NASA patch off the wall behind me?
Yeah. Shh. Take it off.
They'll confiscate all the posters in the room.
Quick break, and we will be back with the Hacks and Strange Stories because we also have, what do we have, Media Corner stuff and Geek Library. So hang out. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
Hi, this is Brian from Coverville, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig from Technorama.
Geek Thoughts.
Garbage in, garbage out. But what about that recycling bin?
There were some audio artifacts in that clip, Craig. What did we record that on?
I don't remember.
It was like
Casio tape deck.
Yeah.
And then digitized. I just realized in Nutty Bites' promo that they're playing the same GarageBand clip that we used on the EAA clips we did years ago. Craig, you remember these. It's when Steve Pruitt and I went and we did like the Honda Jet interview, and I know nothing about jets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just fake it till you get it.
Right. And you had made some comment about, I just picture you with that music. Like you're running around going, what's over here? Let's go look at it. Sort of this mischievous thing going up and down. All right. Where were we? We were in the Hacks and Strange Stories. And I'm not sure if I want to partake of these or not, but Craig, why don't you take this one?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I want these either, but
I would.
Contact lenses that darken in sunlight are going to give you some creepy alien eyes. Unless you're like Ben, who already has creepy alien eyes.
Yes.
When he takes his contacts out.
Yeah. What contacts?
So Johnson & Johnson has teamed up with Transitions Optical, the company known for making those glasses that automatically darken when you go outside, to bring you the unique technology to contact lenses.
I would do this.
You would?
Yeah. Just to be weird. Even though I don't wear contact lenses, I can't stand contact lenses.
You'd get non-prescription transition lenses.
I would do it for this. You know, if I would actually do this because I think this is completely far out. If they can do that, because I know they make bifocal contact lenses. So if they could give me, you know, some contacts in my bifocal prescription that do this, that are photosensitive, heck yeah.
Those sound very expensive.
I'm sure they are, but wow.
Imagine them going dark and you're like in a meeting or something.
Why would it go dark in a meeting?
No, but you go outside. And
yeah,
they get dark.
But most meetings are indoors, so I'm not concerned.
I used to walk between buildings between meetings a lot at my old job, and I always had dark glasses when I walked in. I had transitions for a couple of years.
They didn't transition fast. Those were really, really slow in either darkening or lightening up. And I've heard now, I haven't tested it yet. I don't have any, but I've heard that now these things really change pretty quickly.
Hmm.
And yeah, if that's the case, heck there. Yeah, I'd get a pair.
My luck, somebody would throw me on the ground and he's not responding. His pupils aren't
dilated.
They're dilated.
Get off of me. He's becoming agitated.
Yeah, I'm okay. I think we pretty much covered that article.
All right.
It's done.
The 2-week disposable contacts will presumably work similar to, let's see. I was hoping to find a price in here. Transitions contact lenses have been cleared by the FDA. That's good. I always want that. So you're not putting weird stuff in your eyes.
It did say that the lenses darken slowly and then lighten up slowly. So I wouldn't do that.
Nah.
Yeah. It'd have to be kind of quick.
It would have to be.
It would be. I've had, transitions before and you come inside and until it's like, all right, hurry up.
If they're glasses, that's one thing. You can at least take them off. I mean, you may not be able to see clearly, but at least you can see.
Right.
But if you're doing contacts, no thank
you. Hold on a minute.
Yeah, not about to.
How about one in and one out? Then you don't have to worry. You can do like the old pirate eye patch thing. You go inside, your pupil's already dilated. It's great.
No, you do
never
like this, and when you go outside,
time, maybe.
You just switch over real quick when you go outside.
Yeah, because that's normal.
Take the patch and move it over.
All right, shout out to the chat room. Craig, who do you see in the chat room this week?
Why, I see
Romper Bomber
Stole Fetters. I know she's somebody from church and our friends. And John Miller Jr.
And Clinton.
And Chuck Tomasi. What?
Who's that guy?
How are you into? And Clinton Alvord. Yeah. And Clinton Alvord. And John Miller Jr.
All right. Do I have anybody here that I see that you don't? Watching now. No.
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 No, I don't. Okay. So if you want to catch us, you can watch on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time. We do this show by
proxy. Via satellite.
By
proxy.
By sheer luck. No.
Yeah.
He's trying to say by two coasts, but we're not on the coast. Craig is not even on the coast, but we're across a few time zones each. So we try
to a coast than you are.
Maybe.
Well, North Carolina is a coastal state.
Okay.
So is South Carolina where I
actually live.
We're
not that far from the sea.
Oh, you're in South Carolina. Yeah. It's still a coastal state.
Yes.
It's just south of North Carolina.
Right. Southern North Carolina.
Yeah. North Carolina is just too far north. So I stay here, South Carolina.
Well, we're at
too
it.
Too far north? What, them damned Yankees?
He's the northern Southern Carolinian.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's give a shout out to our wonderful, our outstanding patrons because they give us a minor donation every week or every time we produce a show. And in return, they get special content that most people don't. We thank you gratefully for that because their donations help offset the cost of running this show in hardware and software and hosting and anything else we can assumably come up with. Thank you very much to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, who I believe Abner is our highest contributor to date. I think we need a leaderboard for him. Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, aka Crazy Joe, Night Gig Studios, aka JT Shea. That just rolls off the tongue. That's fun to say.
JT Shea Butter.
Oh, I like that rhyming there. That's good.
Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
John Noble?
Not that,
that John Noble.
No. Chris MC. Alexis Turrell. You know, we do that even when you're
I
not
know,
here.
Of course.
It's a bit like leaving your mics open during our Technorama promo.
Right.
We should do that on this show. No, that kidding. Would be mixed up and messed up.
Oh, yeah, why not? Oh, sure, you should be.
Steve Therrien, Jorgis Rauen, and this could be you.
Did you get Alexis Duran Duran?
Alexis Duran. No, we couldn't afford the second Duran.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Copyright.
All right. Just because you said that, now we have to do it. Where's my promos folder? It's in here somewhere. Promo. Technorama.
Oh, no.
We have to do this. It's completely what? Uncalled for.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God.
Okay. Because Ben does this so well.
Technorama, the podcast for geeks. Because geeks are better than cool. You don't hear someone say, get away from me, you cool person. Who's going to have their 65-inch home theater system installed by the cool squad?
Not me, that's for sure.
How much cool cred do you have? Not enough to care about. Think you'll find any canned unicorn meat at thinkcool.com? It's just a park domain name. They don't even have roadkill in a paper cup. That's why you need to start listening to Technorama. Because that's what geeks do. Go to chuckchat.com and listen to Technorama before you turn cool.
Incidentally, the Podcasting for Dummies podcast episode this week was on promos.
Really? Imagine that.
And guess which? We use that one as an example.
Because you use that one as an example?
That was one of the examples T and I played in when we were recording that. Okay. It wasn't all about the show. In fact, there's almost nothing about the show in there. If you think about it, that's one of the weirdest promos you've ever heard.
Most of our promos don't have really much about about the show.
I sense a theme.
You get the idea that the promo's not taken seriously, and neither is this show. That's just the fun of it.
Yeah.
And we're coming up with another one, but that one will have a little more about the show in it. Craig's just got to record his side of the conversation.
Well, doesn't that fall in line with that whole idea that a podcast has to be entertaining? So if the promo's entertaining, then you kind of lure people in.
Yes. The promos are probably more entertaining than the show itself.
We can only muster up about 30 seconds worth of entertainment, so that's why we make promos.
Every 6 years.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah.
That's right. Really sad.
We forgot to tell people how they can become a patron. You can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast, and for as little as a dollar a show, you can be one of our honorably mentioned people and get a free extra episode of... It's not produced anything like this. It's even differenter than the different.
Differenter.
That's right.
I like that
word. It's the differenterest show you've probably ever got.
It's the most different. It's the differentest.
It's like we take the gloves off and everything's just a lot of fun in that show. You're really missing out.
Actually, you know what? Speaking of promos, I kind of like our Birth Your Inner Geek one.
The one that Kim helped you out on?
No, she didn't help me out on that. I used some audio.
Was that Susie? No, there is a there. It's a congratulations. It's a geek, and I thought it was Kim at the end. It goes, man.
No, it wasn't Kim. It was we had downloaded a bunch of free audio clips, and it had It was something, and it had a
you had an audio clip of some woman going.
Yeah, that was it. It was like a men's section and a women's section along with all the other sound effects.
That's the sound I make every time I read the National Enquirer.
Hey, play it. Can you play it?
No, we'll play it. We'll play it later. We've got a couple more stories to go. I want to give Ben a chance to talk about what he did. Well, we need the media corner thing here.
Yeah.
There.
Welcome to Blockhead Video. Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Things.
Over here, in the media corner.
Crazy things. You know, Chuck, you sound so young in that clip.
Oh! Ouch.
It was a long time ago.
About 10 years ago.
More than that.
Amazing what 10 years of this show can do to you.
It ages a person. Yes. It really does.
It really drag a person down.
Yeah, I mean all these wrinkles. That's just from doing TG Geeks
podcast.
Yeah, podcasting. That's done that.
Don't do podcast kids.
Don't do podcast kids. It's bad for you.
Stay in school.
Yeah.
Drink your orange juice.
Stay cool. Stay in school.
Don't podcast.
So, Ben, tell us about the Phoenix Film Festival.
It just ended as of a few hours ago prior to, you know, from this recording.
Sorry, dear listener, you're late.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. It runs for 2 weeks. Or a little more, 10 days, actually. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to see all of it, clearly. What ended up happening is we just went up for the first weekend. There's one movie that we were doing a big push on. That's a film called a science fiction feature called Chimera. I would call it a science fiction horror fabulous one at that. So we were giving big push on that because the publicist for that film reached out to us to give us first opportunity to do reviews and do interviews, et cetera. And so we did. We were the first group to review it. We were the first people to interview the director. Actually, nice. That was his very first interview ever.
Really?
Yeah. And this is a first.
You seem to do that to a lot of people. You interview them, your first interview.
Ambush.
All the best. Cool. All the better. And he hit that. It was his first film. And it's an amazing movie about genetics.
Oh.
It's you know, science gone mad kind of thing, but not in a really, you know, zombie like kind of horror thing. It's all about a man who wants to cure his dying children.
Okay.
So he uses genetics to do it. There's a little bit of a Frankenstein parallel to it.
Sure.
So we were there to really support that movie because it had just started doing the film circuit, the film festival circuit. But it gave us an opportunity to kind of catch a few other things. Last weekend we just went up. We just drove up and then drove back home, drove up next day, drove back home. So we weren't able to see a whole heck of a lot. And then what we decided to do this last week is on Thursday night, we actually broke down our podcast studio and moved it into the host hotel for the event because we thought this would be a great way to get interviews. And wow, did we get some really, really great interviews. Because the neat thing about independent filmmakers, well, you should know this because you did this at Comic-Con a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And that is, they want to talk about their film.
Yep.
They really do. Yep. So if you approach a director, any kind of independent filmmaker and say, or writers, I would like to talk to you about your movie. Oh, they will jump at the opportunity.
Exposure. Sure. It's exposure.
Absolutely. It's big time exposure. Yeah. So we got to meet, we attended, you know, one of the sci-fi blocks. Interesting films. I would say that. There was some interesting stuff. The animation block was amazing.
Really?
That animation block? Yeah, the animation block was just, it was all animation short films. They were phenomenal. I mean, just, they blew my mind. They were so good in terms of quality and storytelling. Fantastic stuff there. And we hope to get an interview with one of them that did, the short is for a film, I believe, called Nora, which is...
That sounds familiar.
It's kind of like a proof of concept. It's sort of a steampunk. It looks kind of steampunkish.
Okay.
It wasn't the one we were talking about last week, was it, Chuck?
That might be why it sounds familiar.
It's a really short film that's actually supposed to dovetail into a sequel feature film and possibly even a web series. It's CGI, but it looks like it was done as stop motion.
Oh, okay.
It's a beautiful looking thing. Fantastic characters. I mean, it's a very, very well done animated film. So we, you know, caught a lot of these things, but spent most of our time catching Chimera. But we would always go out, and because of the publicist, who also, she likes to do publicity work for us as well, she was introducing us to all these directors, saying, you know, these are the two gay geeks. If you want to be interviewed, you want to be interviewed by these people.
Nice.
And everybody.
What do you mean by these people?
Apparently, they like being interviewed by me and Keith because we're very nice and we're very laid back. So unlike other podcasts that, you know, they're very QA kind of thing. Well, you know Chuck and Craig too, because we've had you guys both on our show, you know, and we really like to keep it conversational. We really like to keep it loose.
Yeah, so a lot that's of people, the way to do it. Yeah, that's the way I like to do it.
Well, I agree. And I find that if you can get the director to talk about themselves and the product, then they'll just open up and tell you everything and start telling you stories that, you know, no one else has ever heard. So we got a lot of these interviews, and these are being released in addition to our regular episodes. Our regular episodes come out on Monday mornings, and those are available through all the various podcast means. I mean, we do have an audio version on YouTube. You can go to our website. You can hear it there. but you can, you know, catch it on iHeartRadio, Spreaker, iTunes, SoundCloud. There's all sorts of places where those episodes are available. These interviews are on the website only, tggeeks.com. All you have to do is find the relevant article, go to it. Yeah, thank you. And your $2 are on their way. And you can then you can find the little player, the embedded player, and you can hear the interview there. And I would say that, I mean, we interviewed, like I said, a number of directors, including one name. His name is Sean Skeen. He did a really fun little short film. It's sort of like, what's that Guillermo del Toro movie that just won?
Hateful Eight?
No, Shape of Water. Shape of Water.
Yeah.
It's like a cross between Shape of Water and Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Okay.
It's a cute, fun little short that he filmed up at his grandparents' cabin. And then we interviewed, we interviewed this fantastic woman. She's from India. So she did this, it's a drama, but it's really born out of the culture of the country of India and the way women are treated. Fascinating conversation with her. And we interviewed the people from Chimera numerous times. And in fact, last night we got to interview one of the actresses. And she, I'm not even going to pronounce her name because I can't, but she was so unbelievably animated. It was just one of the greatest joys to being able to talk to these people. So I would say go to tggeeks.com. You can catch all those interviews there. Also, I've got reviews or mini reviews of a lot of the films that we saw. So if you're curious or if you hear about any of these shorts that suddenly become available through means, you know, streaming means like Vimeo. Vimeo is a great source for finding a lot of short films. I check out our website because a lot of them do get reviewed by us. And I do want to give one little tiny teaser. I'm not going to say who was on the show, but holy cow, we've got one amazing episode that we recorded from the film festival that will be coming out a week from this past Monday as of when you're hearing this.
Mark Hamill.
I'm not saying who it is.
I'm taking just wild guesses.
I'm not saying who it is.
He won't crack.
So tomorrow is the 16th. So on April 23rd, mark your calendar, people. We've got one fun episode that day. It is a joy. Keith and I just had the greatest time doing this one. I can't say anything more. It was just an absolute blast. But yeah, we had a great time at the film festival, and we've already decided that next year we are going to actually spend the entire time at the Host Hotel. It's held up in North Scottsdale at the Cine Capri, which is a fantastic theater. I mean, it's a huge, huge multiplex, but they actually have, they built a room that mirrors the original Cine Capri that was in downtown Phoenix. They still have that. But they got all these smaller theaters. They each have little names. You know, one room is called like the Arizona Republic and other. I can't remember the names of all the different theaters, but they're really comfortable. They have fantastic lounge chairs. So next year we're going to just take the entire studio up and we're going to be there for the entire duration.
Set up the studio in one of the theaters.
No, in the hotel. Yeah. In the theater. That'd be great. I'm
right
sure the venue
stage
would love that.
Well, hey, depends how much you sponsor.
Well, we were definitely a sponsor. Our name was, you know, in big lights there on before each film block.
Nice.
But yeah, we'll go up there, spend the entire time with the studio in our hotel room. We'll spend the day because during the weekday they only program in the evening. So we'll use the day to interview all sorts of directors who are going to be in town for the festival. And this year they had over 300 films.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow.
Another reason
why. That's a lot of movies to watch.
It's a lot. You know, they repeat them numerous times throughout the entire festival, which is another reason why we want to stay there for the entire run, because that will give us a chance, you know, if, and they have a lot of feature films too. So it would give us a chance to be able to catch any kind of block or feature film where there might be a conflict. So it'll allow us to do that, you know. And we're not just talking independent films, but they also like to bring in a lot of old classic feature films. They were running This Is Spinal Tap.
All right.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that on the big screen. I never did. So I would love to have seen that. They were running Flash Gordon, Sam Jones film.
Okay.
So lots of really great movies. If you are a cinemaphile, you have got to check out the Phoenix Film Festival. It's, I think it's one of the best in the nation. I really do. But we had a great time.
Cool. We got to get, we'll carve out some time next week. Or you, next,
it would
next
be,
year.
It would be worth it. You know, and it's, I think it's a great opportunity to meet really, really great talent. And one of the things that I've said, you know, over and over and over and over and over again on our show is that, because I will see, I could go to a horror, independent horror film, and find that the quality of those movies exceed what is being put out by the big studios.
I agree.
In
most cases, that's...
So if you want, so that is a great place to meet amazing talent. And especially since, you know, Phoenix Comic Con, or now it's, I think it's Phoenix Comic Fest, they don't have any film programming anymore.
That's disappointing.
It is very disappointing. So all the more reason to go to the Phoenix Film Festival.
Yeah, we may want to think about that, Donna, and swap out our calendars and say, all right, we'll take a weekend and do the film festival instead of a weekend and do the...
It is really, really worth it. You will have an absolutely great time. A lot of the filmmakers come out. There's always Q&As going on. It's a great deal of fun.
All right. Since we're on a separate... You just triggered a thought that we haven't mentioned it, or maybe we have, Craig. You correct me if I'm wrong, but... Craig and I and Clinton and our spouses are going on the Star Trek 3 cruise
next January.
January 4th, is it? I believe that's the date.
Yeah. It's right after the first of the year.
So Norwegian Jade, if I remember the
ship
name,
although
right?
I am not jealous of that.
No?
No.
You're not a Norwegian fan?
I'm not a fan of the Norwegian cruise line.
I've never been on Norwegian.
I've only been on the Pearl. I've not been on the Jade, but the Pearl was an utter nightmare.
The Black Pearl?
Yeah, that's it.
Actually, it's the Norwegian pearl. So how would that be pronounced?
So hopefully we'll get to see some celebrities. Hopefully we'll get to see some listeners to our podcast. We also do The Topic is Trek over at thetopicistrek.com.
You know, if you got any mobile gear, you might want to bring it.
I got the H6. It's
bring it because my understanding. I mean, I don't know about the Star Trek cruise, but I know people. You know, I'm a big fan of prog rock, and there is a prog rock cruise line that goes out every year, and a lot of people have easy access to those musicians that perform on those cruise lines. So it might be worth your while to bring the mobile gear in the hopes that you can at least get a sound or two.
Yeah, there's definitely an opportunity there, and I would want.
Brent Spiner, leave me alone.
that's my experience with him last time.
Was it really?
He was sort of, pretty much a hostile brush off.
Yeah. Oh, that's sad. How tragic.
Well, the one time I spoke to him, it was not dismissive, but it kind of got a weird feeling from him.
Yeah. Maybe he just wasn't feeling well.
LeVar Burton also gave us a rejection, but he was a lot nicer about it.
Yeah, well, LeVar Burton, it was on Sunday or maybe Monday right before I left. Him and his handler were at their table by themselves. Nobody was around. I just walked up and said, hey, LeVar, I just wanted to say I'm a big fan. I'm getting ready to head out, so I just wanted to shake your hand. And he said, well, hold on a second. And they just sat there and talk to me for about 10 minutes, which is
great. They have no problem when it comes to just chatting you up, but a lot of times when you want to put a microphone in their face, sometimes they get really put off by that.
Yeah, we've had that experience the last couple of years.
From the handlers, mostly.
Most of the handlers,
it's sad because the celebrities want to talk to their fans.
You know, 9 times out of 10, that's true. They really do. It's the it's the organization / the handlers that say absolutely not.
Right.
Yeah, we've had a couple of people say, hey, they don't allow us to record stuff in this room. I'm like, you kidding me?
Okay, let's go get some coffee.
Keith and I interviewed Gareth David Lloyd at Phoenix Fan Fest a few years back, and it was in the dealer's room where the autograph tables were all set up. We didn't have any problem.
The famous architect?
Yeah. How did you guess?
Yeah, that's him.
That's why they allowed it, because no one else wanted to talk to him. Sure.
Well, speaking of the dead coming back to life.
Yeah, that's a good transition.
We're doing poorly on the transitions. Apparently, high-definition vinyl is coming next year. So the process of making records hasn't changed much over the last 100 or so years, and there is a video attached to this article if you follow it through the show notes on chuckchat.com/technorama. You can see how I was actually impressed at the labor involved with pressing vinyl. It's not as straightforward as I thought. And the weirdest part of the whole process was they put the label on before they pressed the record.
Really?
I would have thought that was a post-production thing.
No kidding.
Yeah, the label goes onto this blob of molten vinyl.
So that they know what it is they're going to be
both sides.
Printing?
And then they partially press it into, they say hockey puck size, and then it goes to pancake size. And then it goes into the master, which is, you know, the hard metal disc part that goes, presses it out into a 12-inch, and then they trim off the excess. And that's it. The label is on there the whole time.
They have to have it on there because when they cut the hole, or in the case of a 45, they cut a bigger hole. You want it lined up. You don't
want the
label going.
I've seen some pretty messed up labels in my life.
Oh. Well, that was because it was probably made on a Friday or a Monday.
And the hole was cut off center. I mean, we had...
I haven't seen that.
What was it? Tom Petty's You Got Lucky that was like a half inch off center.
But I have seen many times the label that's off center, and I will just stare at that thing as it turns around and it's hypnotic. Then I throw up because I get motion sickness.
Hey, come here.
Reading on all over the album.
Reading on, it hasn't changed in the last 100 years or so, but that itself could change soon. Austria-based Rebeat Innovation has begun working on vinyl into the 21st century. Of course, that involves lasers. Specifically converting analog audio information into digital. 3D topographic... Well, I know that Styx Paradise Theater had a laser engraving.
It did. On it. On the backside, that was pretty cool. Really awesome.
Specifically converting analog into digital, 3D topographic map of the music, and then etching that into a platter with light.
Isn't that called a CD?
That's what I was thinking.
I was about to say the same thing.
It's a compact disc.
According to Pitchfork, this process will result in around 40% longer playing times on each side, 30% more amplitude, and will offer better sound quality overall.
Compact disc, just an LP size.
Wait.
It's a laser disc.
Is this the point of listening to vinyl, to not get that high def sound?
It's a laser disc.
Oh, boy.
I don't think they really need to improve on a vinyl. Just keep making it.
Also, sidesteps the chemicals typically involve using the record-making process. There were a lot of chemicals involved in this video that I watched. The first HD records won't be in stores for a while. Rebeat recently picked up a $4.8 million investment, and it's using $600,000 of that money to buy its laser system, which may not ship until this July. From there, the company needs to produce test stampers and find a handful, 5, of pressing plants. The plan is to have test pressings ready for Detroit's Making Vinyl Conference this October, with LPs arriving at your favorite record.
Wait a minute. Is it compatible with
turntables?
That was my next question.
Yes.
Is this compatible with a standard turntable?
Purists might scoff at the idea of vinyl needing any improvements, of course, which I just did, thankfully. I mean, you're welcome. But the fact remains that the sound quality for records is all over the place, and not everything lives up to the, quote, vinyl just sounds better, man, credo that your music mean friends crow about.
I disagree with that, but
that's not to mention how inconvenient it can be to flip a plate at 14 to 20 minutes, especially in social or party situations. The increased amplitude might be nice too. And with the hotter source, you likely won't have to crank your amp as loud. Maybe best of all that it's HD vinyl takes the music world by storm. Unlike UHD Blu-rays, you won't have to upgrade your equipment, and underlined, to listen to them. That's right. Your existing turntable, which I have one sitting right here next to the studio, will play these and your collection of vintage records. It probably won't stop labels from putting out new versions of their classic catalogs at even higher price, of course.
Great. I got to buy Pink Floyd The Wall again.
Another copy of Dark Side of the Moon.
And
spectacular.
Star Wars soundtrack.
And the White Album. Oh, it's already racking up. You know what? This sounds like a gimmick to me.
I think it is, to be honest. I know that LPs are making a really interesting nostalgic comeback of a sort, but I think that's just a generational thing, because I still think that downloads are going to be, you know, MP3s. I still think that's the
I
way
have to upgrade Petula Clark.
Oh my God. Is that with Downtown on it?
Let's find out. Don't give up. Have Another Dream on Me, Your Love Is Everywhere, One in a Million, Beautiful in the Rain.
Actually, it sounds more like a conversation.
This
more like a conversation than a song list.
No, there is no downtown on this.
Oh, what a drag.
Yeah, that's not the good one. This was a garage sale freebie.
Oh, that's the bad one.
The bad. How many did she had more than one album?
I have no idea.
Peter Nero.
Oh, my word.
Tom Jones Live.
He's got to be doing Delilah.
John Ho Live at the Polynesian Palace.
Tiny Bubbles.
My good stuff's off to my right. These are just random ones I pulled out.
You know, I'm going to echo a little bit what you said. You were trying to say, Ben, I think, was that although I love vinyl and put my hands on.
Yeah, there's something about it that is there. It's an experience. You know, as opposed to, you know, you just go to your iTunes library, fire something up, or Billy Idol. Far out.
But at the same time, I'm a little torn because it is so convenient to jump into my Google Music
and just play it off there.
I can listen to anything.
You know, and with, you know, things like Apple TV and devices that allow you to get the music into your home stereo.
Yeah, I want to listen to quality sound.
Now, I admit there is something. That's a good one.
Eagles Live.
That's a great album.
Oh yeah,
that's a very good album.
Totally we're trying to have a conversation here.
Yeah, stop it, Chuck.
I'm derailing my own show.
Yeah, you've hijacked your own show. How dare you? How dare you hijack it from the hijacker? No, but there is something really cool about actually, you know, taking the LP out. And putting it on the turntable and gingerly
reading the liner notes.
I mean, all of that. I mean, it was something of an event almost every single time you wanted to listen to an LP. You know, and I admit I kind of miss that. And the liner notes and all of that. I mean, that's you don't really appreciate that
album art.
Oh, album art. I know you hardly get to really appreciate that.
Queen's
now.
News of the World. I don't know how long I've stared at that album cover.
Oh, me too. Yeah,
that was a wonderful piece of art.
Or any album cover by Roger Dean, who did the artwork for the band Yes.
Okay.
Oh, his artwork is just mind blowing. Or Geiger's work for Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Brain Salad Surgery. I mean, album artwork it's a lost art. Yep, to be honest, I mean, yeah, you can see that on CDs these days, but it's just not the same. So yeah, there's something to be really cool about LPs themselves. But if you're just simply talking about sheer audio. I still say that CD is the best way because you don't have an actual contact being made between the needle and the source of the music.
Medium. Yeah, there's no friction. Yeah.
Exactly, because you play that so many times and eventually it is going to start to wear.
Yeah.
You will get a degradation.
Yep.
It's unavoidable. So I remember what a guy at a stereo store told me when I first saw the very first compact disc player. He said, the beautiful thing is, you know, when you put on an LP and you crank the volume, you not only get more music, you get more noise. But when you put on a CD and you crank it up, all you're getting is more music, louder music.
Yep.
You're not getting louder noise. So there,
I sure did love my Violent Femmes album when I could hear the record pops.
But how would you know? I mean, how would you know that Violent Femmes are they were pretty.
You don't have to balance the tone arm on a CD.
Pretty what? Hmm. I want to hear what you.
No, I was just thinking about. Violent Femmes. You know, they were really phenomenal when it came to sound.
That might be the exception because when you turn up the Violent Femmes. You don't get more music, you get more noise.
Yeah. and to be honest, and I do like the Violent Femmes. So, you know,
they were a large part of my teenage angst, whatever angst I had, but
the Violent Femmes were part of your teenage angst? Wow.
I don't know.
That's amazing.
One of my friends had a couple of their albums and I was like, "Oh, I got to tape them." And I made tapes. And I listened to the hell out of those things. I love the early Violent Femmes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're amazing musicians too.
You want to do this last story, Craig?
No, we run out of time by now, right?
Well, time is relative.
Like my uncle.
So, you know, in the Chuck programs, I program and I keep seeing, you know, I always look for the random function to randomize the number. And I'm like, okay, that's good enough. But apparently for some it's not.
Nope.
Because it's not entirely good and random, because computers are, you know, pretty static in a way they do things.
Right.
So it's hard to come up with random numbers. So researchers have come up a way to generate truly random numbers by using quantum mechanics.
Which in itself is random enough.
Yeah, it's a very random science, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. So the method uses photons to generate a string of random ones and zeros and leans on the laws of physics to prove these strings are truly random.
There's nothing
rather
to prove.
Than merely.
Unless positive. You had quantum entanglement. Then you could have two of the same random number.
And you have quantum intersections.
But that's really great if it's one computer reading another one.
Yeah. Across the universe.
Well, yeah. Right. I mean, you got, you know, your computer and Craig's computer, you know, they're quantum entangled, so you keep rolling the same number.
You wouldn't have to have database backups that way.
True.
It's self-backing up.
Yeah. But if you're trying to roll a 20.
I keep getting 20s. This is awesome.
Every time I roll a 20, he rolls a 20.
Every time I roll an 8, we keep rolling the same number, Craig.
It's clearly random. The researchers say their work could improve digital security and cryptography. The challenge for existing random number generators is not only creating truly random numbers, but proving that those numbers are random. It's hard to guarantee that a given classical source is really unpredictable, says Peter Bierhorst, a mathematician at the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
NIST.
Where his research... Huh? Yeah, NIST.
NIST.
He's part of the researchers that say NIST.
Yeah, he's the knights who say NIST.
Our quantum source and protocol is like a failsafe. We're sure there no one can predict the numbers.
You shall cut down the biggest tree in the forest with
a quark.
Quark.
It can't be done.
So I don't know how random do you, well, I guess for cryptography it can make a break thing.
I think it's a good idea. This sounds like our best hope for purely random numbers.
Well, I don't have a quantum computer just laying around.
No,
but you could hire a service that does it. You know, send out a web service call that says, go get a random number and come back.
Why do I feel like this is just a breath away from AI? Because then it'd be capable of, you know, if this kind of science were involved, it could lead to completely independent random thought.
I would love to see a random computer, just like an artificial intelligence that was just as scatterbrained as humans.
Yeah,
that's an AI I would like to see.
Oh, I thought I gave that to you an hour ago. Here you go.
Oh, I want to see. I want AI with OCD.
Hey Ben.
Yes.
That's actually CDO, right?
CDO.
CDO.
Yeah.
Yes. The letters in the right order.
Mm. Just thinking about that earlier today. You think it's closing in on the singularity? We're doomed.
Actually, now the more that I think about no. Actually, well, here's a scary. I'm gonna step into some really dangerous waters now. So I mean, an AI that uses that kind of, you know, quantum computing.
Yep.
I mean, now we have an artificial Donald Trump. Thank you very much.
I'm not going. You're not going to bait me into the political discussion tonight.
Enough said.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. Good way to end it. Craig, what's our question for the dear listener this week?
The question is, what text makes your life harder, and it was intended to be the other way around?
Oh, that's easy. Computers in general.
I was going to say. Actually, I was going to say Windows.
Random number generators.
How are those supposed to make your life easier?
It's great when it works, right?
Right. Yeah. I tell that to people
all the time
at work. The internet's a wonderful thing when it works.
Yeah.
But when it breaks down, wow, it's epic.
We want to hear from you. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on the internet at when it works. At chuckchat.com/technorama, or give us a call on the listener line 206. Whoa, no, that's the old one.
Wow.
Wow, that We've been on this one for, like, what, 3 years now? Four years?
Sorry, I was... Yeah, poor old K7.
Long live the dog. Oh, wait, that was K9. 707, as in the airliner, 530-2428. That spells chat, if you didn't know that. Or technorama@chuckchat.com. We will put that question out on Facebook probably Friday or Saturday. Start generating some responses and get your input for
random generating
week.
Responses.
Yes, AI can tell us randomly and make up some of those interesting Star Trek titles and that sort of thing. So let us know. Thanks, Ben, for stopping by.
Oh, it was a joy.
And thanks, Craig, for helping out.
I'll do it again next week, too.
That only leaves us one thing for us to do, and that is to wish you all a very binary high five.
It's right. 101.